بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. This is session 23, and it's based on lesson 19 of the book Philosophical Instructions. The title of this lesson is The Value of Knowledge. As you remember, we said that the most important question in theory of knowledge or in epistemology is to see whether it's possible for us as humans to know the real world, and if yes, how? So first of all, we should answer this question, whether it is possible to know the world or not, and if yes, how? What is the best way to make sure that we have grasped the reality? The discussions that we have had up to now all were related to this important question, and today we want to have a final study of this question, and then in the next session, God willing, inshallah ta'ala, we will have a discussion about how to evaluate moral and legal propositions, and by that we will finish the discussion about epistemology, the second set of 10 lessons of the book Philosophical Instructions. Regarding the possibility of knowing the world, the most relevant question for philosophy, of course, would be the possibility of knowing the world in a rational or intellectual way. Because sensory knowledge is not something that we are concerned with in philosophy. Because by sensory knowledge, we cannot know those things which are important to us in philosophy. Because sensory knowledge is only related to the particulars, to individual instances. But in philosophy, we are after universal principles. So we must see, is it possible to know the world in a rational or intellectual way or not? In respect to knowledge by presence, al-ilm al-huduri, certainly there is no problem, and we can know the objects of knowledge by presence with certainty, without any doubt or suspicion. Why? Because as you remember, we said knowledge by presence is where the object of knowledge itself is present to us. We do not need any image to act as mediator between the knowledge or the person who has the knowledge and the object of knowledge. In knowledge by presence, the object of knowledge, or what is known, or al-ma'lum, itself is present to us, like our knowledge about ourselves, our knowledge about our acts, our knowledge about our faculties, and even our knowledge about our Creator. All these are possible to be known in an immediate way, in a direct way, in which there is no need for any image to act between us and what is known. So in knowledge by presence, we have no problem, and definitely that would be free from doubts and immune from mistakes and falsity. But we cannot be restricted to knowledge by presence. Or in other words, knowledge by presence does not suffice for knowing the real world. We need more. So we have to discuss about العلم الحصولي or the acquired knowledge or conceptual knowledge, and to see how can we distinguish between those cases in which we can have certain, we can have true, we can have immune acquired knowledge, and the cases in which we cannot have. So the main question now is reduced to the question whether we can have some sorts of acquired knowledge, some sorts of al-ilm al-husuli, which are free from doubts, which are necessarily true, which are self-evident or reduced to self-evident propositions or not. This is the main question for us today. Before we go into the stage in which we can answer this question, we must first of all clarify the meaning of truth. When we say, can we know the world, can we have true knowledge, what do we mean by knowing the world, or in other words, what do we mean by truth? It's very clear, but unfortunately sometimes clear ideas become ambiguous when different opinions, different views are presented. So something which in itself is very clear becomes ambiguous. We mean by truth or haqiqa. Please look at the screen. We have al-haqiqa. And here we mean by al-haqiqa truth. Okay? So what is the meaning of truth? We mean by truth here an idea or an image in our mind which corresponds to the relevant reality. So this correspondence is very important, and this is why this theory of truth is known as theory of correspondence. Whenever I have some knowledge, whether it would be in the form of ideas, tasavvurat, or tasdiqat, affirmations, if that thing in my mind corresponds to the relevant reality, the relevant reality may be something outside or maybe something inside. If I am saying something about my own way of thinking, so the reality to which this must correspond is inside my mind, maybe inside my heart. Anyway, whether the reality is external or internal, what is important is that something to be true needs to correspond to the relevant reality. A true proposition would be a proposition whose relation corresponds to the real relation, to the relation which is outside in reality. For example, when I say this flower is yellow, this proposition to be true depends on having a correspondence between the relation between predicate and subject in the proposition to the real relation between flower and yellowness. So if the flower outside is really yellow and I make a proposition and say the flower is yellow, so these two relations correspond to each other, therefore this proposition is true. But if the flower is supposedly red, but I say the flower is yellow, so this relation does not correspond to the relation which exists outside in reality. So this is a false proposition. Okay? So this is the meaning of truth. And we are not happy with other definitions of truth. For example, some people have said that truth means something which has practical benefit for us. This is the pragmatist definition of truth. So they say, why should we bother ourselves to talk about correspondence to reality or not? What is important is whether something works or not. If something has some benefit for us, that is true. If has no benefit for us, it's false. Or, for example, some people have said that truth is dependent upon having a healthy mental and understanding system. If our mental system, if our understanding system is working properly, so whatever is the outcome of this would be true. So you see how superficial is this definition of truth. Or some people have said that truth is something that all people agree upon. This is also superficial because on many occasions people may agree on something wrong. And we must know what is the criteria for being true or false. People agree on something to be true. So what is the meaning of being true? So to agree or disagree is something secondary. First of all, we should see what is the meaning of truth. Or some people have said that truth is something that we can know and we can prove, we can demonstrate by sensual or sensory experimentation. This is also not related to the definition of truth. This is about a method for proving some sorts of truth, only those which are related to the sensory matters. So the best definition of truth is to have a correspondence between the relation expressed in the proposition and the relation that exists in reality between those two things which have been referred at as subject and predicate. If there is such a correspondence, so this sentence, this proposition is true. Otherwise, it's false. Now let's see, how can we make sure that we have grasped the truth? How we can recognize the truth? Rationalists have mostly focused on the necessity of having some ideas as innate ideas or ideas which we are given by our nature. And they say that these ideas which we are given by our nature are self-evident, and based on them, depending on them, we can build a structure of knowledge which directly or indirectly can be traced back to those self-evident propositions that we are given by our nature, the innate knowledge, al-idrak al-fitri. For example, Descartes had this idea, and this is something that is acceptable to a great extent, to a large extent, but not completely, because there is a question here, and that is how can we make sure that those propositions which we are given by our nature are really true. Descartes was himself aware of this question, and his proposal was to appeal to our concept of God. God that we believe in is the one who is wise, who is merciful, who never misleads his servants. So if we are given something as part of our creation, as part of our nature, it means that God has given us this knowledge. And this cannot be false, because otherwise God must have deceived us. And we never suppose that God is deceiving. But the problem with this answer is that this answer in itself is based on prior understanding of certain facts. So we first of all must have made some judgments so that we can come to this conclusion that God is there and God is merciful, God is wise, and God never misleads us. And those things which are presupposed by this article of faith in God or belief in God, those themselves must be verified. So to verify them by the belief in God, which in itself relies on them, will make it circular. So we were not happy, if you remember, with this suggestion made by Descartes. So we need some solution here. How can we make sure that those things which are given as part of our creation are really true and they cannot be false? So here the author says that we must find a solution for that. We must find an answer for that. Because if we don't have any independent answer for this, some people may say, okay, this is part of my creation, but if I were created in another way, I would have understood the things differently. Or if there are other sorts of animal who are thinking and who are created in different way, so they may have a different understanding of the reality. So we must have some argument to show that this is not something accidental. This is not something arbitrary. So we need some external, some independent argument here to show that what we understand by our nature, what we take to be innate, what we take to be fetri, is really true and immune from falsity. The suggestion made by the people who are empiricists, and that is, we accept those with articles of knowledge which can be verified by experiments, is not also promising, is not also very much helpful, and we don't need that much discussion about that, because we said that this is a very limited understanding of the truth to say everything is reduced to what can be experimented, and there are many things even in mathematics, in logic, which cannot be experimented. And we think that experimental knowledge is not that much certain, and we need always to back up them by intellectual arguments so that they can become certain. So let's see what is the real solution for this. We must start with classifying propositions, different sorts of acquired knowledge, different types of al-ilmul husuli. Regarding al-wajdaniyat, if you remember, we had a type of propositions which were called al-wajdaniyat, those things which we understand by our conscience, or you could say by inner sense. Like, for example, I feel happy, I feel sorry, I feel sad, I feel hopeful, I feel optimistic. These things which I can understand by my inner sense is very close to knowledge by presence. Because I understand the reality by knowledge by presence, but when I put it into words, when I make it in a propositional form, when I interpret it in an acquired knowledge, this will be no longer knowledge by presence, but it's very close to that. And because we have the reality within us, the reality of being fearful, being hopeful, being sad, being sorry, so we can always check whether this sentence is true or not. So we don't have that problem which we have when we want to verify something related to the external world. Because the external world is not within us. So we have the problem how to make sure, how to verify, how to assess and investigate the correspondence between what is inside us and what is outside, the proposition which is in mind and the real world. But here we don't have this problem. Why? Because the fact to which this proposition refers is something that I can know within myself, inside myself. So for al-wajdaniyat, we have no problem. And this is very good to begin with. But this is not enough. There are also some other things that we can know for sure. For example, those propositions which are related to logic, in which we use secondary logical intelligibles, al-ma'qulat al-thaniya al-mantaqiyya. Because these are related to the relation between concepts, and concepts exist inside us, again, here we have no problem. The whole business of logic can be assessed, can be investigated within ourselves. So we don't need to bother ourselves to talk about the external world. We can understand the truth here. So if I, for example, want to say that the concept of man is a universal concept, this is something that I can understand inside my mind. So for these sorts of propositions also we have no problem. We have also no problem regarding primary self-evident propositions. Because primary self-evident propositions are those propositions that their affirmation only depends on conceiving the subject and predicate. The author believes that primary self-evident propositions are all analytic sentences, analytic propositions. So predicate is part of the concept of subject, like all fathers are married or all fathers are male. Or, for example, every effect needs a cause. So to be effect means to be caused, to have a cause. So when we say every effect has a need for cause, so to have a need for cause is something which is part of the concept of being an effect. So when we say every effect needs a cause, this is an analytic sentence, and this is something that we can know without any doubt, without any problem. So for primary self-evident propositions also we have no problem. Whether the, for example, proposition that there is a need for every effect towards a cause, every effect must have a cause, whether it can be applied to the effects which are outside or not is also discussed by the author here. Some people may say, okay, you can imagine the concept of effect in your mind and the concept of cause and the relation between them. Even you can imagine the effects which are inside you, which are caused by yourself, and evaluate the relation between them and yourselves as their cause, and make many, many propositions. But how can we make sure that these propositions apply also to cause and effects outside? The answer is very clear. Whenever you have some instances of a universal concept and you make some judgment about those instances without considering their specificities, their particularities, those judgments would apply to all similar cases. For example, if I say something about man as such, not about a particular man, but about a man as such, that would apply to all cases of man. If I say something about water, but not about a particular water, about a specific water. No, about water as such. Then it would apply to all different cases of water. So this problem is not that much serious here. The other part of this discussion is the criteria of truth and falsity of propositions. So How can we make sure that a proposition is true? As you remember, we just said that to be true means to correspond to the reality, to the relevant reality. So the criteria of truth and falsity would be to see, first of all, what is the relevant reality, and then to make checking of this correspondence. If the reality is something mental, so we can make this checking very clearly. If it's something related to the external world, we must make this checking by those things that we have, those self-evident ideas or something speculative which can be traced back to self-evident propositions. So we need to make this checking. Here, there is a concept which is very important, and please look at the screen. And that is the concept of nafsul amr. Nafs al amr. Amr, sometimes in Arabic, means command, and then its plural would be umur. And sometimes amr means thing, affair. Then its plural would be umur. Maybe I made a mistake in my expression. If amr means command, its plural would be awamir, means commands. If amr means thing, affair, its plural would be umur. Here we don't mean by amr command. No. We mean by amr thing. Something, some affair. And nafs, sometimes in Arabic means soul. For example, we say an-nafsun natiqa. It means soul. But here by nafs, we mean itself. So, nafsul amr means the thing itself, the case itself. But this is a technical expression, and it's a bit sophisticated. So, please be very careful. We said that every proposition to be true must correspond to the relevant reality. Philosophers, Muslim philosophers, to refer to this relevant reality, they have coined this term, nafsul amr. So they say every sentence, every proposition has nafsul amr. Means something to which it must correspond. So by nafsul amr, they mean a realm, a domain, a universe, a container in which the relevant reality lies and to which you must make this checking whether the proposition in your mind corresponds to that or not. So, if something is related to the external world, its nafsul amr would be the external world. For example, when I say this flower is yellow, nafsul amr for this proposition, for this fact, would be the external world. But if I say man is a universal concept, its nafsul amr would be the mental world, something that we can understand by our mind. Of course, it doesn't mean that this is in my physical brain. It means that this is part of the abstract world by which we are familiar through our mental activities. This is not something you can observe in the material world, because in material world there is no universality. Everything there is particular. Everything there is individual. This is part of the abstract world, and we are familiar with that abstract world through our mental activities. There may even be some proposition which have no reality at all, but still they are possible to be checked with the nafsul amr. For example, if I say self-contradictory idea does not exist, because we don't believe in the possibility of having contradiction. So something having its own opposite does not exist. A and A not, or not A, do not exist. It's not possible to be red and non-red at the same time. It's not possible to be tall and not tall at the same time in respect to the same thing. So, to what realm, to what reality I must check this sentence? The philosophers, to facilitate, they said to Nafsul Amr. But what is Nafsul Amr? Nafsul Amr is a greater world of reality, part of which is the external material world, part of which is the mental world. But that is the greatest universe. And every act of judgment that we make must be checked with this whole domain of truth. In this domain of truth, there is relevant reality for physical things, for material things, for universal things, for logical things, for philosophical things, for mathematical things. Everything must be in a way or another related to the whole universe of truth. So, what is Nafsul Amr? Nafsul Amr is this general truth, this general domain of truth. What is the Nafsul Amr for this particular proposition? It's that aspect of this whole universe which relates to that. So for things which are related to the experimentations and to the sensory ideas, the Nafsul Amr would be the material world. For logical facts, the Nafsul Amr would be the mental world. For philosophical propositions, the Nafsul Amr would be the real world, but not in the sense that the real world corresponds to the experimental knowledge. No, because here we have secondary philosophical intelligibles. So when I say this is something contingent or necessary or possible, this is something actual or potential, this relates to the external world, but there is nothing as potentiality or actuality or contingency or necessity or impossibility separately put outside. These are the things that we abstract from the external world or mental world. So everything has its own Nafsul Amr, and as I said, this is something made by philosophers to facilitate our speech about the relevant reality to which everything must be checked. So, thanks to God, in this way we have been able to finish lesson 19, and inshallah, in the next session we will talk about how to evaluate moral and legal propositions. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.